Next, we will conduct our regular weekly city council study session. The first item on this agenda is to hear a presentation and provide direction on a comprehensive We're not doing that agenda item. Next item is, the item for Mesa's Idea Museum is being continued for a week.
Yeah, our director is out sick, so we'll just.
Got it. So we'll hear about that next week. Item 1B is to hear a presentation and provide direction on the release of a request for proposal for the redevelopment of the Shrine House into a farm-to-fork restaurant and a request for interest in operating a downtown farmer's market. Looks like we've got a great team ready to tell us what we need to know about this. Jeff and Jeff, and I'm sorry, you'll introduce your third member, I'm sure.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Morning, Mayor, Council. Jeff McVeigh, Manager of Downtown Transformation. With me today is Jeff Robbins and Mario Klein. They're going to be our Shrine House slash Farmers Markets experts. Based on 2 weeks ago, instead of being here to present what we want to do, we're here to present what you let us do. So we're going to run into and get started and show you what we're looking for with this RFP for the Shrine House. So to give you a little bit of background, this generally came out of, an idea came out of the Imagine Mesa campaign. There was a lot of support for the creation of a community engaged restaurant, farmers market, and urban agriculture center. We had already been doing some thoughts about creating a restaurant concept for the Shrine House, and this seemed a perfect match to be able to marry those two together and create the sustainable, I should say, the farm to fork and community engaged urban agriculture experience through the Shrine House. We also, and some of the council members know this, we also had very much interest from the community. The neighbors in the West 2nd Historic District actually came to us and asked us to find ways to help activate the Shrine House. And to give you a little background on the Shrine House, it was built in 1896. It's one of our pioneering family's original farmstead house that was north of downtown. The city purchased it several years ago. It was in a state of disrepair, and we moved it into downtown. Did some repair work to it, brought it back up to a nice condition so it could be presented to the community. Unfortunately, during some budget difficulty times when there was less, the budget was tighter, that was one of those things that we weren't able to maintain for general open public use. So right now it only is open one day a week, that during the historic home tour. Other than that, Thank you, Mayor. One day a year. And other than that, we don't really get to, the public doesn't get the benefit from the city asset. So the Shrine House is listed on our on the Historic Register of Historic Places, which means that we have limited things that we can do architecturally. The house is pretty small, so by itself it probably couldn't accommodate a restaurant. Architectural changes can happen, though, on the rest of the site. There's an adobe structure on the back that could be incorporated, and there's some other improvements like a gazebo that could be taken away. It's surrounded by the neighborhood on the west and the north, convention center on the east, and to the south is a Southwest Herb Shop that also has an education center that we think there could be some links between these two projects as well. From a parking perspective, on-site, it's not going to, if we were do have a restaurant here, there's plenty of parking on street and adjacent at the convention center, but not enough space to put parking right on-site. Now with that, I am going to hand over to Mariel to give you an actual description of the RFP and what we're asking from the development community.
Hi, Mayor and Council. So our main goal with the RFP is we're asking for a developer to really come in and transform the space, first and foremost into the farm-to-table, sustainable, themed restaurant. But aside from that, on the rest of the property, we would like for them to provide community engagement opportunities, since the community is very involved with this. And we would like them for them to provide opportunities for urban agriculture, for in whatever means they would like to do that. So it's pretty open to them. We would like for them to, again, first and foremost, just come in and transform the space and tell us what their vision for it would be. So to that end, what we're asking for them to commit to in this RFP, obviously would like a development proposal, a business plan, and we would like for them to commit to taking over the whole development and the daily management and operations of anything that they would have running on the space. So that would be the restaurant, that would be any programs that they have running. We would also like for them, again, to engage the community throughout all phases of this so that the community has knows what's going on throughout the construction and the development, and again, any development of programs and opportunities for community engagement. We would like for them to engage the community through all of those phases. And with the interior of the actual Sorine House, what we're asking for them to do, since we are restricted in what we can do with that property, since it's a historic property, we would like for them to use it in its historic form as a dining space. So the restaurant would be built somewhere else on the property, and the actual Sorine House would be used as a dining space for the restaurant. In the RFP, what the city is committing to, providing a lease for the use of the entire Sorine House space. So we do own that entire space, and we are willing to participate in coordination throughout the entire process, whatever the developer would like assistance with, permitting, anything related to development or construction. And we would also like to be a partner with them in terms of marketing and community outreach. And we would be willing to assist them in using our City of Mesa marketing and communication channels for them to promote whatever they would build up there. We would also be willing to assist in facilitating any partnerships that they would like to form, so with any of the local farm bureaus, Arizona or Maricopa County, any local FFAs or any other community groups that they would like to partner with. As of right now and in the RFP, there is no dedicated city funding for this project. However, we would be willing to consider that if one, the developer requests it, and if it provides significant public benefit.
Okay. So in addition to the Sorine House, on the Imagine Mesa campaign, the bringing a farmer's market to downtown was also an extremely well-received idea. So there seems some synergies between the Sorine House and the idea of a farmer's market. So we also have a second request for information that we released at the same time to see if there is interest from operators of a farmer's market. And Mr. Robbins is going to give us an overview of that.
Mayor, council members, good to be with you today. For our farmer's market, we started off just trying to figure out, well, how would we go about doing this? We did a lot of comparative research and found that there are a number of operators who are successfully operating in the valley and doing a great job running their markets. So we figured this is something where the private sector can run this. And so we're going to be releasing this RFI primarily to find out, all right, is that interest that we think is there actually there? And how much interest is there in people coming to Mesa to run this market for us? Now, in this creation of the farmer's market, the city will be a partner, and we're going to be a partner in a few different ways. One of those is that it's just finding the space for people to come down and run the market. That's one of the most important things that we could do as a city to help facilitate this. The second is to be a partner in the marketing and the advertising. One of the big challenges that farmers markets have is that if there's not enough people showing up to actually buy their goods, they slowly start to decline. There's fewer people coming to sell because there's nobody buying, and it's kind of this declining cycle. We want to make sure that everybody knows this market's down here, and we can lend the things we're already doing, the great work of Julia Thompson and our PIO office and Steve Wright and his team, to help support this market and make it successful and vibrant. And as Marielle already mentioned for the Sorine House, there's great things we can be doing to make connections between organizations that are like-minded. Future Farmers of America, there's also a community-supported agriculture program that maybe we can tie in at a later time. The point is this is a hub of sustainable thinking and living, and there's lots of other organizations that could, if we bring this market, also benefit and merge their talents. So we have a map of some sites. I want to make very clear that these are not the only sites we are considering. The biggest purpose of this RFI is to get feedback on what makes a market work. We aren't the experts in this, and so we are reaching out to say, all right, what are the locations that would be best? What are the hours that would be best? Everything that we can think of, we want to know what the best practice is and what the experts think we should run this and how we should do it. So one of the critical points is the location, and there are challenges to some of these sites. For example, Mesa Convention Center, we met with Mark Hirschberg and his team, and they're active on the weekends. And so if the RFI comes back and the experts say, oh, Saturday morning is the time, or Saturday during the day is the time, that might not be the ideal site. But Pioneer Park may be great because we already have the spider boxes there for the food trucks, which partner well with the farmers market. And so we're trying to be very thoughtful in how we approach this. We want the market to be successful, and we're taking our time to make sure we choose a right location that's going to make it exciting from the beginning. And one last thing I wanted to point out is that the question is, why downtown? Well, one, that's how it came in through Imagine Mesa, as Jeff mentioned. But two, this is a food desert. And so what that is that it's a location that has been identified by the U.S. Department of Agriculture as being low income and low access, meaning that they have trouble getting access to fresh and healthy food. And there's two different degrees of that. There's a kind of a lower degree, which isn't quite as severe, and then there's a higher degree. And downtown, this downtown square mile, is one of the higher of the severities of food desert. And so we want to change that script here in Mesa. We want to bring fresh food to everybody in the community, make sure that they're able to give that to their kids and help improve their lives. That's really the purpose of this market.
Excuse me, Mr. Thompson has a question.
Go to your previous slide. Why not consider in the interim, before anything is developed, the corner of University and Mesa Drive?
That's a great question.
Plenty of parking. You're not impacting kids at the park. You're not impacting events at the MAC or at the convention center.
So, Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, that's a great suggestion, and no sites are off the table. We have definitely thought about that. It's definitely going to be in the mix. A few things about that site. One of the considerations is that if we are going to be developing University Mesa, and so that means in a few years we'd be picking up the market and maybe moving it during that construction, and that can disrupt a market, so we want to be mindful of that. And the other thing is that there's a lot of positive externalities that come from a market. And so while it'd be great for maybe some of the businesses across the street on University, if we are able to maybe move it downtown proper, all that foot traffic is really going to create those positive externalities for the businesses around. And so we want to consider many locations that provide great synergy. And again, University of Mesa, not off the table at all. We'll definitely consider that. Thank you.
Okay, so our next step was going to be, with council direction, we'll release the RFP and RFI, but we received that direction, and that RFP and RFI were released earlier this week. And so we're now in that window of a two-month window to allow the development community to prepare proposals and respond to us. And then once we have those proposals back, we will evaluate those and come back to council with a recommendation on how to move forward. We're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. We do have two blue cards from the public. So, Council, should we go ahead and hear those, or do you want to go ahead and I know, is that all right? So let's go ahead and hear from the public, and we may invite you folks back to, or maybe you'll assist us in responding to some of these issues. First is from Liz Foster. Ms. Foster, welcome. We also have the material you put out for us.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. Council Member Mark Freeman called me on Tuesday night and asked me to come and provide some information for you. My name is Liz Foster, and I am Executive Director for Maricopa County Farm Bureau. Earlier, a few months ago, I did meet with Council Member Freeman and your staff on your project. I, for one, am actually very excited that you guys are doing this. In your packet that I provided, this red folder that Council Member Freeman handed out, is the food desert that your staff was talking about is on this sheet right here. And in that sheet, the green areas are areas where citizens within your community have to travel more than a mile to a grocery store, and the orange or golden rod colors are more than a half mile. On the left side of your packet, you'll find just some statistics about food insecurity. Maricopa County ranks about 16% of their this citizens within the county are food insecure. Mesa has 61.3% of your households have children receiving SNAP benefits. If you don't know what SNAP is, that's Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It's provided through the Farm Bill. That's your free lunch, women, infant, children, food stamps.
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time? 61% of...
61.3%. So that is on the very last page.
Right. 61.3% of households in Mesa have children that are receiving SNAP benefits?
Yes. Or of the households with children receiving SNAPs, yes. SNAP funds.
Okay, I need to get my brain around that. 61% of all Mesa households have children that are receiving SNAP benefits?
No, of the households receiving SNAP funds, 61.3% of them have children within the house. But majority of them are probably within your food desert area, from my experience. So these are just some statistics provided by the food bank and the USDA. They're the ones that provide the map of food deserts within the United States. And you can compare yourself to other countries or other counties or other cities. And then on your right-hand side, I actually included some ideas that we as staff presented to your staff and also some resources out there. So with your farmer's market, and Arizona Farm Bureau has a online virtual farmer's market called Fill Your Plate, and it lists all producers within the state of Arizona who grow and produce products that will either sell at a farmer's market or sell directly, and you have several within the city of Mesa, such as Killian Beef. You also have the Freeman Corn Patch, several honey producers, several vegetable producers. One of the things you guys can do with your farmer's market is you can partner with the local food banks, and they have a program sponsored by the state of Arizona budget called the Double Up Food Bucks. And that allows people that are on food stamps to double the amount of money that they are able to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables. So if they go to your farmer's market and you are a farmer's market that participates, let's just say they have $20 to spend on fruits and vegetables, then they are allowed to spend $40. So it's a matching program. And then with your community garden, we're actually very excited because part of our thing that we promote within Farm Bureau is education opportunities for students through STEM. We actually prefer to call it STEAM because we include agriculture in that. Maricopa County Farm Bureau provides literacy grants to schools and producers, people that are working with the public to teach them about where agriculture comes from. So currently we have a grant with Westwood FFA for them to teach students about agriculture. And then along those lines, Westwood, Dobson, and Red Mountain high schools within the city of Mesa have FFA programs that all have what we refer to as land labs. So students get hands-on learning. But they could also be a resource for you guys for hands-on learning within your education garden for teaching not only the public but also other students. And they can... they would receive community service credits through FFA with that. You can also, with your community garden, qualify for possibly some USDA rural development grants because, shockingly, there is enough agriculture in Maricopa County, even though we're one of the largest metropolitan areas in the state or in the nation, that we qualify, Maricopa County qualifies for rural development grants. So you could do that. There's also, Arizona Farm Bureau has an education farming company. Maricopa County, I mentioned, we have our literacy grants. And then American Farm Bureau has what they call their White Reinhardt educational grants so that communities and schools can use them for educational purposes such as your garden. One idea that you guys could also do to promote the education garden and your restaurant is to partner with microbreweries to highlight a crop or a product that you guys are producing in your garden and then sell it at your restaurant if you choose to go that route. And then with your restaurant, you could also, in addition to working with your education garden and your farmers market, reach out to local larger growers such as Danseisen for milk, Hickman's for eggs. You could possibly even sell them in the store in a little market area. And then you could also possibly work with the FFAs if they do have gardens themselves and supplement your restaurant and things. And then you could do community events such as like a farm-to-fork dinner where you shut down the street and you have a very long table and community members get to come out and do that as well. Is there any? I threw a lot of information at you. But Mr. Freeman said I had 3 minutes.
Oh, thank you very much.
that was a 5 minutes.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. No, that's a lot of good information. Okay. Thank you very much.
And I'm a resource for your staff if you need it.
Thank you very much. I also have a card from Paula, and I'm going to mispronounce your last name. I apologize. Silcorn, excuse me. Thank you. Paula Silicorn. Thank you, Paula.
Good morning, and thank you very much for letting me speak today. My name is Paula Silicorn. I'm with the University of Arizona Cooperative Extension, Maricopa County, and the AZ Health Zone. So you can call me Paula because that's way too long a title to remember.
How big is your business card? That's a long time.
I can certainly leave one with you because I'd really like to get to know you. I work in the food access department. So I work with farmers markets, promoting them. We also work with community gardens. So we can help you with this project in a number of ways. We provide resources for community gardens. We also teach gardening classes. So if you have parents or just adults who would like to learn how to garden, give me a holler and we can teach them. On the farmers market, I'm really excited about the possibility of starting another market here because I work a lot with the WIC folks. I teach people how to use all those programs that my predecessor told you about at the farmers market. So the kinds of things that we're hearing is that people don't want to use the benefits because they can't get to a farmers market in this area. So I'm really excited about that. We can provide a number of resources for you. If you have beginning farmers, we can loan them some equipment for a while. We can promote your farmers market. We can connect you right now. Jeff sent the list, the information that we could put on our listserv to publicize your okay, gone blank. The survey and the call for. Thank you. Sorry, haven't had my coffee yet. But we're here to help you in any way that we can. I do work with the farmers market managers, so you're invited to participate in that. And we address different things that apply all over. But rather than fill you with more information, just I want you to know that we are here to support this project in many ways. And I am always available if you want to give me a call when we have more time to just kind of chat and when I'm not nervous.
Thank you, Paula.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Thanks for stepping up. We look forward to working with you. Mr. Freeman. I don't think we have any questions for you.
Okay, do you want me to just leave my cards with someone here? I'm new to this.
The nice woman you're sitting next to, Natalie, will take your business cards.
Thank you.
You bet.
All right, thank you so much.
Thanks for being here. You bet. Mr. Freeman.
Hey, you know, this project's growing on me. It took you a little while.
I didn't know it was going to be so corny.
Oh, there you go. You know, I really appreciate staff looking into this and imagine Mesa bringing this forward. One of the opportunities is I've traveled. I always look up farmers markets regardless of where I travel, and I look at sustainable food sources locally grown, and then I take it back, and we cook it at wherever we're visiting at. With that said, there are numerous, again, farmers markets I've been at, and I see that this is an opportunity. We used to have one in Mesa, and it just really didn't do very well. I mean, it did the best it could, let's put it that way. Our family has been doing farmers markets for about 36 years, and I know how the struggle it is. But with the resources that Liz talked about and the other young lady there, the opportunity exists to, and I guess this question for Mr. Brady, what's our, for infrastructure needs, for what do you and we as mayor and council intend, where it to be built? Do you intend to participate in that area, you know, if there's money? I don't know if there's monies for CDBG monies to be used. I'm might be a possibility. But infrastructure, you know, I was looking across the street, kitty corner to the Serine House. There's open space there. Green space and open space is a very desirable asset to producing a farmer's market where you could buy it. You could walk across the street. The local chef or whomever could cook it right there for you, and along with his menu. But I guess one of my questions to staff is, are monetary or infrastructure commitments to this?
So, Mayor, Councilman Freeman, we have, I think it was mentioned earlier, we put the we put out the RFP, the RFI, to first kind of engage in a discussion with potential interested parties, so that we can, one, kind of get an idea of what business model they think would work best. Location would obviously be important. And then I think once we understand that better, then we would come back to council, because we think there'll probably be a gap. There are certain sites that were presented to you today, or at least suggested, that already have built in a lot of infrastructure that's available today, kind of plug and play. Other sites, not so much, but maybe that's typically how we've participated previously. We've been able to support if there need additional irrigations or water systems or whatever it might be. Serine House, you know, we're making available prime property and improvements. But I think what we want to do is kind of engage, and we don't want to presume we know the answer to that now until we have start a conversation with a proposer or somebody who's interested in doing this, and then we would come back in a partnership and present to council whatever that form may be of our participation, whether it's land, whether it's infrastructure, or whether it may be monetary. But we wanted to kind of engage in the conversation first.
Thank you. I know I've gone to the farmers market in Scottsdale, and their pavilion area, and next to their museum, and their museum is there, their farmers market, and it's shoulder to shoulder just trying to get produce. How many have been there to their farmers market in Scottsdale? Several in the area. And it's a very desirable place, and I appreciate them doing that. I do have one other question. Bring it up here. I think farmers markets provide a varied source of locally grown produce that, and it's seasonal, and be able to get it in an urban setting is very a fun thing to do. I know a lot of moms, when we have our stand going, they just love bringing their kids out to farm, which may not work here, but yet if you have a farm person who can bring some things, and the ag literacy component is very important for kids to understand where produce comes from. You know, I just look at the survey, 7% of all adults believe chocolate milk comes from brown cows. And it doesn't, by the way. My dairyman buddies would be all Boyle's Dairy out there. But I have actually been in contact with our Westwood and Red Mountain FFAs, and they're really excited about participating. They have greenhouses where they grow stuff year-round. They would be able to be sources of income for the local FFAs. And then you have your local food sources, such as eggs and livestock, consumer choices by that, prepared for by local chefs. I don't know, Jeff, did I jump into your business? I'm okay so far? All right. That's probably one thing I like to say. Mr. Wright contacted me about 10 days ago. A production company was shooting a video, a commercial for Marriott Hotels about the importance of buying locally grown produce and taking it back to a Marriott hotel. I'm not promoting Marriott, but that's the concept, and cooking it at their hotels. So Marriott was looking for on-site areas in Mesa and Gilbert and for location shoots. And they're actually, that's what Marriott is doing right now, is doing, and so you can, again, farmers markets are able to provide that source. And so if Marriott's doing it, then Mesa should be doing it. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you. Council, other questions concerning this? Jeff, I think you noted that you'd previously received direction to proceed with the Serine House RFP, and so that's great. Thank you for getting that out. And the idea of the farmer's market I see as being related, but not necessarily, doesn't have to be immediately adjacent to the Sarayan House, and as your maps have indicated, we won't solve it. I like the direction we're going. We're not going to provide you with insight right now that's going to answer any of these questions, but I like the fact that we are looking, these are partnerships. Mm-hmm. The restaurant, this is not the city of Mesa getting into the restaurant business. This is not the city of Mesa getting into the farmer's market produce business. This is the city of Mesa saying we want to have partners, and we see this as productive things that could happen in our downtown and for our community. So I'm very supportive of the direction that's been expressed here. Council, any other questions for Mr. McVeigh? So, please proceed.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Okay, I know we have a couple of council members that have other meetings they need to attend, so we'll allow them to do that as their schedule requires. The next item on our agenda is item 1C. That's to hear a presentation and discuss the council's strategic priority for transforming neighborhoods, including projects, statistics, and key performance indicators. Ladies, welcome.
We're just going to open another. It's already there. All right. Good morning, Mayor and Council. We're very excited to be here. As you see, I brought the whole team with me this morning, and it's not even the whole team. This is what we could fit up here at the table. So there's a whole team behind us and other places that we've done this. So what we're here to talk about this morning is one of the Council's strategic priorities. And our goal is last spring, the Council kind of came together during the strategic planning session and talked about the strategic priorities of the city. Kind of confirmed what those were and what those mean, and conveyed that to staff. Your direction from council at that point was staff, go back and take a look at these and come back to us with what we feel are performance measures that show how we're doing in this area. How are we achieving these particular goals and targets? And so that's what we've done. We've kind of put together, this is transforming neighborhoods is this particular topic. And this is what we have on the screen here is actually what is out on the Mesa website. So this is not a PowerPoint. This is a live feed from the website in our Transforming Neighborhoods area. And so in your packet was a direct link. If you wanted to go through that, you just click on that and open that up. But it's actually on the website, City of Mesa website. If you go on there under the city area and then go to strategic council strategic priority. If you click on that, you'll end up on one of these. So I do want to kind of introduce the folks at the table right here, although most of them are pretty famous. They've been up here before. So we'll start here on the side with, with Chief Batista from the police department. So he's going to talk to you a little bit today. Also, Lindsay Belinke from Neighborhood Outreach. Christine Zalanka is next to me with the Development Services Department Director. And RG Zeter is with me as well for Transportation Director. So that just kind of shows you a few of the departments that are involved. We also have Aaron Romaine in the audience as well for if you have any questions on the clean sweep type of events that we have on this screen as well. So with that, I'm just going to kind of give you, I'll read real quickly just for those at home who may not be familiar with what transforming neighborhoods means. It's Mesa's neighborhoods are clean, safe, diverse, and economically vibrant places where residents and businesses are engaged, informed, and take pride in their properties and their community. So with that, what I'll do is these guys will kind of walk through what they've put together for their stories, what's going on in their areas that actually provide direction and kind of show us how we're doing on accomplishing these goals.
Okay, I'm going to start out on code compliance. Code compliance is really focused on existing neighborhoods. It doesn't have anything to do with new development generally. Our goal on code compliance, the primary city code that we focus on is the nuisance code or the property maintenance code. Our officers do also work with the various other departments, including the police department, transportation, solid waste, on other issues. Our data has been out on the open data portal for the last couple of years. We've given you an example of just some of the metrics that we follow. The first one is code violations closed per year. And the one thing I wanted to note there, there's an obvious drop-off from 2005 through 2008 and 9, and that was when the recession hit. Code enforcement lost about half of their staff at that point. We are gradually working to get additional staffing and the budget. As you know, there's additional code officers to focus more on proactive neighborhood-based projects that we're collaborating with numerous departments. The second metric that you'll see there are code cases by years that are open. The two colors you've got, the blue and the rust, we respond to all code complaints. At this point in time, based on resources, it's primarily complaints that are sent in to us by residents. We inspect them. The difference on the blue is that there was not an actual code violation. So sometimes you think that your neighbor is in violation. They may not be. But we go out and inspect it. And then the other thing that we don't actually have on here, but we really strive hard to get a voluntary compliance. We're out there to work with neighbors, to try to educate them, to clean up their property, to help their community. We typically have about an 86 voluntary compliance. And that's been pretty consistent over the years, where we would prefer not to go to some kind of an actual enforcement action. The other map, real quickly, that you'll see there, and when you look at this live, as opposed to on your iPad, you can hover over each of those areas. Those are the actual total cumulative number of code cases by census tract. That can really help us drive, particularly as we're moving forward, where we want to do projects. The darker the area, the more code cases there are. There's a couple that pop out in Southeast Mesa. Councilmember Thompson knows exactly what's going on there. That's one area that we're working on, and we've actually been pretty successful over the last couple of months. We took down a pretty significant problem area. And then if you look into West Mesa, Southwest Mesa, some of the aging neighborhoods need a little more assistance as far as education and help to figure out what they need to do to maintain their property. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to RJ to talk about graffiti abatement.
Thank you, Christine. Good morning, Mayor, members of the council. In line, I think, really what Christine was talking about is graffiti. And you'll see the number of graffiti incidents probably has some correlation to the same areas where we have, you know, code enforcement. So clearly this is an issue of importance to the council, but also to our staff, because we feel that graffiti, if not abated quickly, will encourage more graffiti. So it's important that we really get at it. So you'll see on the left, obviously, it's kind of a map you know, showing the distribution of graffiti complaints or locations in 2017. And on the right is average number of days to respond. So our goal is to respond within one day. Actually, this average includes Fridays, Saturday, Sunday, and holidays. So if it's outside of the normal workday, but it's something where there's profanity that's visible, we have the ability to bring somebody in so that it doesn't even have to wait through the weekend, especially if there's a holiday weekend or something like that. What I do want to point out, if you look at the pie chart, that you see on the bottom right, is that actually about two-thirds of the graffiti incidents are found by city staff. So what that shows is that we're being proactive and that we're not waiting for calls to come in and simply react, but we are out there in public. We have one dedicated employee to this, and he's very dedicated and very committed to his work. And when I was out on a ride-along with him, he didn't have any citizen request at that point, but he says, I know where the graffiti is. And we went out and found a bunch and attacked it, you know, through different means. But the CityLink app, which is the green, showing about 21%, is our next largest source. So people are using the app, which is great because you can snap a picture. It geolocates the location of the graffiti. And then through the system, we respond back to the person who reported to let them know that we've addressed the issue. So we're
excuse me, RJ.
Yes, sorry.
Mr. Thompson.
RJ, when the contractor or whoever goes out to abate the graffiti, are we taking pictures and getting that over to PD for the gang unit? Because a lot of times the tagging is done by gangs to mark their territory.
Yes.
And hopefully we're kind of tracking and following that along so that if we are identifying gangs or we identify the person that's tagging that, we can seek our compensation or something of that nature back from those individuals.
Are we, Mayor, Council Member, like I've that? Talked to our staff about that. It's been some time. So let me verify that, in fact, where it appears that there's gang tagging, that we're passing that on to the right folks at PD. But we do a before and after. So we record, actually what the graffiti is, and then we show the after, which, of course, is after it's covered up. But, I'm happy to ensure that we're communicating with PD on that because it's a joint effort. So, all I got.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Council, and City Staff. I honestly can't wait until the time I can come here and not be in catch-up mode with where we're at and what we're doing. So I'll tell you that I'll look at this from two perspectives. One is this: we go a little bit lower. I'm sorry, a little bit higher, and talk for a moment about clearance rates. So, in my estimation, the clearance rates are a sliver of really what transforms a neighborhood. It's great to know that, and I'm proud to say that, for example, on assaults, we have a clearance rate that is approximately 50%. I think that's great. Property crimes, notably, we're one of the only agencies, I think, in the state that still looks to do DNA analysis on property crimes, which helps us solve those crimes. And I think that's great. But really, if we're talking about trying to transform a neighborhood, it's a much deeper conversation. It has to do with our involvement with the community. And I know I'm not saying anything that's foreign to you, but it is about building trust. It is about building resiliency in those neighborhoods. It is not about exclusivity or affluence. It is about social norms that are enforced within those areas. And it is about how we collaborate with those communities, with other city departments, to ensure that there is that feeling of safety in those areas. Where there will be disorder, for example, in a park, what happens is we need to be collaborating with the folks in the Parks Department, with the people that use those parks, to better understand what's occurring and how to mitigate those issues. So I would love to have a conversation with you individually or as a group to talk about how we approach this in the future, but I think that clearance rates is only a sliver of what we should be doing in order to help build this resiliency in this community. So as the outsider now, but here 10 months, I can tell you that my overall view of Mesa is that we have very strong social norms. So now we've got a great foundation. With that, I think then now the focus becomes on how to deal with those isolated issues in certain neighborhoods where we haven't been as strong in building those relationships. In order to create that fabric, that net of safety that is necessary for communities to be safe and for communities to provide those social norms again that say these things aren't allowed in our area. And when it happens, we're going to report it. And so how does that happen? That happens with trust, that when they call us, we'll respond and we'll address the issue that's at hand and not go into other directions or other areas. So with respect to our clearance rates, they're great, in my estimation. I worry about where they'll be in the future, simply because as I came to you and talked to you a few weeks ago, the people that handled these cases after the fact are detectives. And those are the areas where we've had to pull officers from in order to have that front line of safety with uniformed officers. So for the moment, I'm okay with the clearance rates, but that's all dependent on population growth and increase in calls and increase in crime rates and our ability to keep up with those based on the staffing we have today. So with that, if we could move to the next portion of that. One thing that I think is important is for us to track what we're doing in the community. And so I think there's roughly 600 some events here that are cataloged in areas where we were in neighborhoods talking to people about crime and building that community feeling. Things that we already do in Mesa that go all the way from the 4th of July celebration to the Easter egg hunt that happened a few weeks back, all of those things are what builds that feeling of community and engagement. And in the future, our officers are going to be even better able with their mobile devices to be able to track what they're doing in this arena. So I think that there is a lot more that we from the police department can do in this engagement component. I think that, for example, in the arena of graffiti, I think that all of our officers, all of our non-sworn officers that are out in the field, their eyes and ears that can handle and deal with this issue of graffiti. It's just a matter of us seeing it and reporting it. And the idea that Mr. Thompson brought up about the fact that there should be communication going on between transportation and the police department to identify those specific tags, you're absolutely right, because that's criminal damage, and you generally have just a small number of young people in a particular neighborhood that are responsible for it. And once you begin to figure out what the tag means, we can then begin to zero in on where it's coming from. It's not rocket science, and so I will work with RJ to establish that, because I think that that's important. Graffiti should never be anything that we see as normal, because then it begins for those neighborhoods to be part of their normal environment, and that can't happen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, well, that was a good lead-in to my information. We're talking about fostering connection, so really looking at how residents connect and collaborate with each other, and also how they learn to effectively utilize city and community resources. On the site, we have included information about neighborhood outreach programs that correlate to this, to fostering connections, including our neighborhood registration information and our UConnect programs. And then we are adding a new data set that will be coming in the future related to the Nextdoor private social networking site for neighborhoods. We see this as a really great indicator of how people are connecting with each other and also connecting with the city. We currently have over 58,000 Mesa residents that are using Nextdoor, and the city is enhancing how we use it to communicate with residents. So we're looking at all the available data sets right now through Nextdoor, and we'll be adding that data to the site to reflect some of those connections that are being made as well.
So Mayor and Council, this is one thing that we do want to kind of point out, that this is always a living process that we have. Work never stops as we try to achieve our goals. And so as we try to look for transforming neighborhoods, this is kind of the story that we have put together. Again, this is an example of how we can put a story with the data. Just some administrative type things. When we're looking at all of these data sets, these are data sets that are currently sitting on our open data portal. We've just pulled in particular data sets in order to kind of tell the story of what we're doing so far in the city. If someone had interest in that particular data set, we'll come up to code, because everybody loves code. So if you come up in here, just the way this the system works is that if you're interested in this, you want to get some more information, you can click on the view data source. It actually takes you out to the open data portal to the actual source data where you can get out and get more information. So that's kind of how this whole system works as we move to the new open data portal. But again, this is it's a living system. So these are the data will automatically be updated every time it's updated on the open data portal. It's just kind of a live link into this page or story as we start to tell the story. And as you heard, there's some areas like the Nextdoor data that we're just really starting to get into. These are going to be great data sources. This is going to take us a little while to kind of figure out how to best use that data and how to use that so that we know that we're communicating with residents and that how are we doing today versus how are we doing tomorrow and the next day, and what is our target that we're trying to get to. So these are all the things that we're kind of putting together. This is one of the pages. We'll be coming to you in the future, kind of one priority at a time, as we kind of get these teams collected, because as you can see, it is a citywide team. It's a multi-departmental team using this, and for all of the priorities, that's how we'll be approaching those, and we'll kind of bring those to you as we kind of get the pages formed and developed, and always looking for feedback and discussion on how we can better set up the page or what things we can look at that you're interested in. All that type of feedback is also welcome as well.
Great, thank you. Mr. Thompson.
Yeah, I love these discussions. Chief, thank you to you and your personnel that is starting to help us clean up Desert Sands. That was a big bust that we did out there last week, or that your folks did out there last week. And of course, Code's coming in now to help abate some of the issues that we had there. I remember when we had our code compliance discussion early on, my colleague Councilmember Whitaker talked about the ability to utilize the app, our MESA app, for code compliance. Because one of the things that I find, and I have folks that message me through Nextdoor because they're afraid to call in code violations because they feel as though they will be singled out as, well, you know, the guy or the next door neighbor that has the weeds or the code violation would feel, you know, they feel like they would be ratted out per se to the person next door. And so they usually will message me, and then I will, you know, message Eloy, well, now Lieutenant Russell, you know, just to have somebody, hey, can you send somebody out to take a look at this? Because it could be an issue, but the people don't want to, they want to remain anonymous because they don't want retribution. And that was one of the ways that we found out what was going on in Desert Sands, and we're still finding even more stuff in Desert Sands, and hopefully we can clean that up. But, you know, are we moving in that direction where we can utilize the app for those citizens that want to remain anonymous, that where they can potentially take a picture of a code violation and send it in and kind of be off the grid per se?
Absolutely. We've been working to activate specifically the code compliance portion as a drop-down menu on MESA now. It's been up there for the last couple of months. The complainant across the board always has been anonymous in our code database, even when it used to come through or when it comes through what's now our DIME system. We never release the name of who made the complaint when we go out and talk to the potentially responsible party. The way it's working with MESA now is that by default, I think, those complaints are anonymous. When we get them, they come in through the MESA now or City Source application. What we're currently working with that vendor and also Acela, our DIMES vendor, is to try to integrate that information, because right now it's a manual process where we take it from MESA now and then we put it into the code case, and then Ryan will assign it to his code officer to go out and look at it. So yes, we've put that out there. One of the things we're looking at is how do we provide the best information? So is this a code violation or is it not? And then we're still working to improve our kind of outreach on that. But yeah, we're on that app right now. If you go look at it, you'll see code compliance there. It used to be under other. We were getting some code complaints through that, but now we do have code compliance listed.
Thank you. Just for anybody who might be joining this conversation late or wondering why we're talking about data so much, just to step back a year or two, MESA made the commitment to being an open data city. And so we've made tremendous progress on that. We do the best we can to be an open book. People can go to this website that we're viewing on the screen and see a remarkable amount of information. We like I say, good, bad, or ugly, we just throw it up there. And the criticism that or the problem with that is a lot of times too much data, it just is meaningless, right? Unless you draw connections, unless you have kind of are strategic about it, there's no use in having a bunch of data if you don't know why you're looking at it or what you're trying to measure, right? So that sets the stage for this conversation. And so the question is, at a city level, to be strategic about this, should we have a strategic? Well, we have set council strategic priorities, and we've talked about the fact that we ought to have council strategic dashboards that measure those priorities so that we can utilize all this data we have and close to real time, council and anyone in the community that's curious to know how we're doing on these things can log on and have very up-to-date information about it. So I see this presentation as a step in that direction, and just for those who might not know why we're having this conversation. So I think we've been asking the questions, what ought to be on the council's strategic priorities dashboards? And I think that the things that you've showed us this morning is a great start. So I would suggest that we do have a location on this website called Council Strategic Priorities Dashboards or something more clever than that. And the four things that we've talked about today, I think, are a good start in having in that category. So graffiti incident, I love the way that you, it's not just one piece of information, but it's graffiti incidents and graffiti abatement next to it. So it's not just here's the places in town that are experiencing disproportionate amounts of graffiti, but it's also pointing out the fact that typically within 24 hours, we've abated that graffiti. I think that's a more positive and actually a more fair representation of the information. The code violations that is next door to the number of code violations that are closed. Again, I think it's useful information. The clearance rates. Chief, I guess that's probably the best. So, I mean, and this will change. Maybe at some point in the future we'll come up, or we can add, you know, we don't need to have just one data or dashboard for all of the police department. But as we come up with charts or ways to measure that are meaningful, I think we add them to this. And if it corresponds with the council's strategic priorities, we put them onto this dashboard. And then we can all look at it in real time, but we can also, I think, Mr. Brady and the council have talked about as a regular reoccurring agenda item, maybe it's once a month, maybe it's once a quarter, we review the dashboards. And if something pops up, you know, we can have a more detailed conversation about it. Or we can pat people on the back saying, wow, that's great. Look at all the graffiti we're abating in 24 hours or whatever the information prompts us to say. Lindsay, the registered neighborhoods, I guess that's a good one to measure. I appreciate that that's what's on this presentation. I think it's also important that we explain to people why you should register your neighborhood. What do you get out of that? Is that where we want to focus our information and our encouragements, or is there something slightly different than that? I don't know. Again, I'll appreciate.
Yeah, so the benefits of the program are on the site right now. Though there's not a lot of data sets related to registering. We have the number of folks that are registered. We have 573 registered neighborhoods and HOAs in there, which is a significant part of Mesa that's included in all of that. There's not a lot of data related to that particular program. So that's why we're looking at other things like Nextdoor that is kind of a comparative to show how people are engaging with us in other ways as well.
Great. Well, this has been a very useful update. Again, my encouragement is that we create this dashboard and that we move things on.
That's what we think this is.
Okay.
That's what we're looking at. So if we come back, when you go into the, there's different ways of getting here. But actually, when you go into our open data portal, this is kind of the view that you get when you first go in.
Oh, thank you.
And right here is City Council strategic priorities. And so that's where we have those. So when we click on that, you'll get into City Council strategic priorities, which there is a quick link to this as well from the home site. But you can see we have community safety is one of them. And so right now we've got some police data. We have a dashboard. So this would be your dashboards. So this is the police data. We haven't put kind of the stories behind these yet. We're still working on that. But we do, if you were to go on here, we do have our data sets out here on the dashboard, if you will. And so we have some, here's our part one crimes, violent crimes, property crimes, and so forth. And the one we were just looking at is transforming neighborhoods. So this really is, this is the dashboard that we've put together. It's just that we have, again, it's that merging of data and story that we want to be able to say kind of what the story is behind the data, not just kind of show the data. We also have your placemaking. Again, these ones there's no links to because we're still working on them one at a time. And so we haven't, but the next one we'll be working on is probably the placemaking dashboard will be the next one that we start working on as a staff. Skilled and talented workforce. and then our sustainable economy. So far right now, we have two of the dashboards up and live. You can see they have the underlines underneath them. That means they actually have a live dashboard behind them. And again, we'll continue to work through all of those dashboards and create those. And then, again, these are living. So the transforming neighborhoods will be something we are constantly updating. Is this the right measure? Do we want to look at something different? Do we want to add things? Do we want to take things off? So this is our current live dashboard that we actually just walked through.
That's great. We've made more progress on this than I was aware of. So thank you for all the hard work you put into it. I would just encourage it maybe then to have a reoccurring agenda item where we are being updated, and we pull this up and we say,
right. Here's so here, we've attempted to do that. We had one previously.
We scheduled community safety, but unfortunately, due to lack of time, we're not able to present.
So then we came back today with this one, and then we'll be, you know, another month, 6 weeks, we'll be bringing another one forward to you.
Great. Thank you very much. Yeah, and I know that having gone through the budget hearings and everything, it's been a very crowded agenda for the last couple of months.
But for the council's purposes, you can go in and pull up the data sets. Mm-hmm. We're trying to wrap a story around it and a narrative around it so it kind of explains the trends and gives some background behind each of the data sets.
Great. Well, thank you. And just to the graffiti issue, I know a couple of months ago I had a school principal call me very early in the morning concerned about some graffiti that was near an elementary school. We contacted the city very seamlessly. It was referred to the police department because there were some things included in the graffiti that prompted that appropriate referral, and it was handled very, very well. I haven't heard of a bad story of how graffiti is being handled in the city for a long time. So thank you on that specific topic for the great work you're doing. Thank you, Council. Any other questions or discussions? Yes, Mr. Redia.
Thank you for the information. As I'm strolling to through the data, also reminded, like, how do I get a clean sweep trash can or something? So if we can have more of those, like, how do you? It's not a question for the clean sweep, but it's just a reminder for as I'm strolling through the data, is that how can I utilize this as a resident? As I'm looking at this information, going back to the sources that can help. So maybe having those pop up a little bit more. I know there's links to, for instance, the neighborhood clean sweep cleanup program and the how to use the Mesa City link information. So just thank you for adding those and maybe making more of that pop up in that within this data set. So.
Thank you. I think Mr. Glover, are you present on the telephone? Okay, I'm sorry. I thought I heard somebody on the phone. Okay. All right, thank you. If there's no more questions, thank you very much, folks. Great presentation. The next item on our agenda for this meeting is item 2, to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Council, anything you'd like to share with us? Hearing none, Brady, can you help us with the schedule, please?
Yeah, just a reminder, there's a neighborhood meeting tonight with Councilman Redia and the Mesa Police Department. It'll be held at La Casita Recreation Center at 2719 South Reyes from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. this evening. So invite our neighborhoods out for that. And then good news is the pools, Mesa City pools, will open for the summer this Saturday, May 26th. Our next study session will be a week from today, May 31st at 7:30 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Council. If there's nothing else, is there a motion to adjourn this meeting? Thank you, Mr. Thompson. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned.